everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes a Goal podcast, the best place in the entire world, including all of Canada, to learn how to build new thoughts, new actions, and new results. I'm your host, John Acup, and today I'm joined by John Gordon. Who's that? I'm so glad you asked. John Gordon is a husband, father, and author. His best-selling books and talks have inspired millions of readers and audiences around the world. He's the author of the timeless classic, The Energy Bus, which has sold more than 3 million copies. That is unbelievable. He also wrote The Carpenter, Training Camp, The Power of Positive Leadership, The Power of a Positive Team, and his latest, The One Truth. When he's not running through airports or speaking to businesses, hospitals, or schools, you can find him playing pickleball and taking long walks, which are where he gets most of his ideas. John believes in keeping his bio short because his past accomplishments are meaningless. What matters most is that he says something today that will inspire you to take action. I can't wait for you to hear this episode. He's also a friend. We've done events together. We've known each other for maybe 3 or 4 years now. We did an event together in Tupelo, Mississippi. It was one of only 3 times I've ever spoken in the state of Mississippi. I got to do it with John Gordon. He got to meet my oldest daughter, Ellie. He's one of those guys that's further ahead of me in the journey I'm on. And I love getting to spend some time with folks who have done what I'm trying to do and are doing it with excellence. So that's who John Gordon is. Before we jump into the episode, let's hear a quick message from the sponsor of today's episode. Did you know that 96% of people feel they're not tapping into their full potential? 96% of people. That's most people. Now, the good news is, if you're listening to this podcast, you're not most people. You and I can be the 4% that open every gift they have and enjoy every bit of potential. So how exactly do we do this? Well, all it takes is a goal. In fact, I wrote a whole book about it, and my 3-step plan will help you escape the comfort zone, avoid the chaos zone, and live in the potential zone. What if each day felt like a gift and each year got progressively better? It can, and my book shows you how. Today is the day that you can unleash your full potential. All It Takes is a Goal is now available wherever books are sold. You can also pick up a copy at atgbook.com. That's atgbook.com. John, I have been so excited about this episode. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
John, you're my favorite J-O-N. Just want you to know that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, John, I want to jump in. But let's start with a couple easy questions to answer. If you had to pick a walk-up song for a speaking gig, what are you picking?
I always pick Don't Stop Believing because that's my motto. Don't stop believing, staying positive. Obviously, belief is everything. As a man thinks, he becomes. And so belief is everything.
Do you have a moment in your life where you bumped into a recording? Like, the reason I ask is I've talked to Dan Miller before, and he said, you know, I think it was Earl Nightingale's recording of something that really was like the first time personal development changed him or thinking. Like, I didn't know I got to choose my thoughts for like the first few decades of my life. Nobody taught me how to think. What was that moment for you, or series of moments?
You know, as an athlete, I wish I knew then what I know now, because I struggled as an athlete. I was a Division I lacrosse player at Cornell University. And man, I never really enjoyed playing because I always wanted to be perfect. I always wanted to play great. And when I didn't play well, I was a failure. I was always worried about making a mistake that I never truly like enjoyed playing. There was that one moment, one game I remember against Princeton, the year they won the national championship. And I just gave everything I got. I didn't care. I played free and I had so much fun. But I look back and most of the time I was playing like with a clenched fist and not enjoying it. So I didn't realize it then. I didn't know I could choose my thoughts probably until maybe 7, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I mean, even though I was thinking about positivity, I never understood the negativity that was sabotaging me and actually understanding that I could override it, that I could actually choose my positive thoughts.
So for you, what does that look like on a daily basis? Because I think one of the things you and I share is that we're not naturally positive people. Like I tell people, I grew up in Massachusetts. Maybe that's the issue. Like we're jaded, we're cynical, we're sarcastic. Like we use swears instead of the word very. Like we don't say very, we just say profanity. And so like, maybe it's that, but I'm not naturally positive. I've just tested positivity versus negativity and the results are so much better with positivity. In a daily way, what does it look like for you to practice positivity?
Well, I got to say, I'm also not naturally positive. I grew up in Long Island, New York, so Jewish Italian family.
Yeah,
a lot of food, a lot of guilt, a lot of wine, a lot of whining. And my dad was a New York City police officer, undercover narcotics. So
he saw some bad sides of humans. Is that what you're saying?
He saw the worst of humanity, and so. I remember dinner table, my brother and I are teenagers talking about our future. And there's our dad. Oh yeah, I can see when you guys are older. The law firm of useless and useless is what he called us.
What he would say?
Oh yeah, useless and useless. The law firm, which I think is hilarious to this
day. That's funny. You guys had gotten business cards. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you had an office with a desk. Yeah.
Because he was real handy and we weren't handy and we were actually pretty smart. And so we were actually his stepsons, but he raised us since we were five. But a great man, a loving man. And he really did love us as his own, but he was just so negative. Like when I started speaking, he said, I can't believe people pay you to speak. When you're a kid, we pay you to shut up.
Oh, that's so crazy, dude. That is so funny.
So I tell people like, in my talks, I share it all the time because people think, oh, I'm going to come on stage, Mr. Positive, energy bus. And I'm like, no, you have to understand. That's not who I am. I am not Joel Osteen. I am naturally negative. And it took a lot to overcome, so much so that my wife almost left me when I was 31 years old. Like I was that negative that she was going to leave if I didn't change. And she said, I love you, but I'm not going to spend my life with someone who makes me so miserable. You need to change. And that was my wake up call. So that began this journey of researching ways I could be more positive. So what does it look like every day? It looks like me taking a walk this morning on the beach, practicing gratitude, because the research says you can't be stressed and thankful at the same time. And I started those walks when she was going to leave. That's when I started taking those walks every day. And they changed my life. They literally forced me to start tuning into the positive instead of the negative every day. And I didn't realize it then. Like I didn't know what I was doing then. Obviously, I wrote about it now in The One Truth, but what I realize now is that, I was going out every day and just focusing on the positive, tuning into the positive, and then starting to attract more positive things in my life with that kind of attitude. So that was a game changer for me, and I still do it to this day. It also looks like when I am having a tough day, it's me realizing it's not going to last. It's just temporary. Stay the course. You're on this roller coaster every day. And so often when we're in that low state, we want to jump off the roller coaster. Don't jump off. Just stay on and you'll ride that wave to a higher peak, to a higher state of mind if you don't jump off. So often we think something's wrong, something's broken. And that used to be me like, what's going on? You make one mistake and you think it's going to be like that forever. No, it's just temporary. So I tell myself that. And then it's also, a lot of times, being that former athlete, people think like I'm Mr. Confident, but I struggle sometimes with confidence. Like I realize I'm courageous more than I am confident. I'll just be bold and take the step. So sometimes I have to tell myself and talk to myself instead of listen to myself. So the voice comes in that says, you don't have it today. It's not going to go well. Like that talk when you first get on stage, that talk, like you wonder like, do I have it today? As an athlete, it was the same thing. Like, do I have it today? Will I play well or will I play poorly? Will this go well or is this not going to go so well? And it's that moment where I say, you know what? I didn't come here to be average. Let's go. Go for it. Share a message. Make a difference. Inspire someone. Make one person's life better. Go for that. And I'll tell myself that. So that's what it looks like in a practical way. And then when I'm writing a book, it looks like where I have no idea what I'm going to write. And it looks like pure being terrified, like just pure concern, wondering if you have it, if it's going to actually emerge, what's going to happen. And it's that process of uncertainty and fear that you dive into. It's very scary. But then as you get going, all of a sudden the book starts to come alive. Yeah. The characters start talking when I write fables. And that's actually scary for some. But for me, it's like, okay, this means I'm on the right track. And then I start to get more and more excitement as it goes along.
Well, and it's been really successful. We were talking about that before you got on. 3 million copies sold of just the Energy Bus. I mean, I think a lot of people who are listening today will have read that book, seen it at their company, seen it with their teams. You talked to a lot of teams. And you've written 28 books. What's interesting to me, so you're wearing a shirt that says One Truth. That's your newest book. I think it's fascinating that culturally right now, I think we practice sadness and practice negativity. And what I mean by that is we wear shirts that say, Namaste in bed, or I'm sorry I'm late, I didn't want to come. I've had enough adulting today. There's this whole, like, online, social media, it's like we're practicing negativity, where, like, if you say to yourself, like, if you wear a shirt that you read 100 times a day that says, I can't adult today, like, what a mantle to put on your attitude, your heart, your whatever. What are some other, for you, positive symbols you might use? So the t-shirt is an easy one. I can see you wearing the t-shirt. There's books behind you that are framed. But I know, like, is it when you're traveling, you always have a book you bring with you? Is it that you've got a coin that is, you know, one of the things that you hold? But where are some symbols for you of positivity in your life?
What a great question, because I think in this world, as you just said, like you said it so perfectly, we're practicing negativity and it's almost become normalized. Like, you should be negative, not positive, is like the motto and the status quo today. Like, you should be negative. And if you're positive, they actually call it toxic positivity. So you're not allowed to be positive anymore. Like, what's wrong with you? You're being positive. Something must be wrong. No, I'm just positive. I'm just happy. I'm joyful. It's because so many, as you know, are struggling with fear, stress, worry, chronic stress, chronic anxiety. And so it's become normalized. And I always say, it's okay to not be okay, but we're not meant to live life that way. We're meant to live life with joy, with power, with peace, with confidence, with courage. And that's how we're meant to live. So I have a new shirt that says positivity, the competitive advantage. So that's one that I've been wearing recently.
Ah, I love that.
Because what I want to say is, no, if you're positive, it's actually the competitive advantage in sports, in business. Positive schools outperform negative schools when we're trying to get higher standardized test scores. Like, whatever it may be, positivity makes you better. So let's not stay negative. Let's go towards the positive. So from a symbolism standpoint, you know, I'll have a rock that people have given me. It's, you know, it's a gratitude rock. It's in my bag. And as a person of faith, I have a cross in my bag. Mm-hmm. I'll carry that around. We have some coins, which is really cool too. We have some garden coins from my book, The Garden, on overcoming the 5 D's: doubt, distortion, discouragement, distractions, and division. And by the way, the root for the Greek word of anxious means to separate and divide. So when you're anxious, you feel separate and divided. And again, so many in the world today feel separate and divided, and fear divides. And people are just feeling more and more powerless. So those 5 D's help me remember, okay, instead of those 5 D's, do the alternative. Trust in truth, unite with love, neutralize the negativity, and elevate your thinking. And so I'll bring that with me as well. And then really it's just a lot of those walks that are key every day. I do two things. And I always recommend people to do these two things now, because I was recommending the gratitude, but I got back to the second one because I know it's important and I know how it makes a difference. A success of the day. At the end of the day, create a success journal. Write down your one success of the day. You start the day with gratitude and with a success. Like, what was the one great thing that happened today? Not all the things that went wrong, but the one thing that went right. And what happens is you go to bed every night feeling like a success. You'll wake up a success. And what you look for, you start to find more of in your life. And when we focus on what people are doing right, they do more things right. Well, guess what? When you're focusing on what you're doing right, you'll do more things right. And I really believe it'll create a flywheel of positivity in your life focused on success.
I love that. It's so practical. It's so deliberate. We jumped ahead a little bit, but how did you get started in what you're doing now? So people look at you and, like, you're always posting photos of, like, you and Clemson or, like, these huge, super successful sports teams. You've got a real heart for athletes, having been one. You've sold millions of copies of books, but it's a weird job. You and I have a weird job. Like, when you describe it to people who don't have a weird job, they're like, but what do you mean? And you go, no, I write books and I go talk to companies and teams about the books. And they're like, But like, what do you mean? It's just a weird job. How did you get into this thing you're doing now?
John, I was at a party like 5-6 years ago and a guy came up to me. He's like, hey, still doing that book thing, that, you know, speaking book thing. Like, they don't think you have a real job. They don't.
Dude, a neighbor that I've talked to a million times said, I still have no idea what it is you do for a living. it didn't feel like a compliment the way he was saying it.
People don't know you can actually make a living doing this work. You're right. It's a weird job. And who sets out to be like a speaker? And I don't consider myself a motivational speaker, but people would basically put us in that category. Mm-hmm. Who sets out to be a motivational speaker and goes out there and just decides they're going to motivate people? And it was really interesting for me because I remember my wife threatened to leave me. And it was during that time I said, okay, why am I so miserable? What am I born to do? Because I was in the .com. I had been in the restaurant business and I sold my restaurants. And then I basically got involved in this .com. Thought I was going to make a fortune, had 100,000 shares. And it was exciting. Like, we were creating wireless technology. We brought the NFL scores to wireless devices. We were the first company to do that. So it was a lot of fun, but then everything crashed. And during that time, that's when I started to crumble from the inside out. And I really believe you have to lose everything to find the one thing that truly matters, because my identity was tied up into success and money. And at that time, I was so focused on being this 29-year-old success who was going to make it rich. Like, that's what I was all about. And when everything came crumbling down, I remember saying, okay, why am I here? What is my purpose? And I'll never forget it. Writing and speaking, boom, just came to me. Literally just came. I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Like, friends still remember me calling them up saying, hey, I'm going to start writing and speaking. They're like, what? Yeah, okay, sounds good. They said, I couldn't believe it when I actually started doing it. They can't even believe it now, selling all these books and doing this work. But that's what I decided to do when I was 30 years old. I'm going to now write and speak during the most difficult time of my life. I'm going to focus on getting more positive, which became the topics of my newsletters, which then led to a book. So I started a weekly positive tip all the way back in 2001, 2002. Literally, like, 5 subscribers, my mother, my brother, best friend from college. Daniel Decker was one of those subscribers because he lived in Jacksonville. And I owned a Moe's Southwest Grill in Jacksonville.
Because welcome to Moe's. Welcome to Moe's.
I was the first Moe's in Florida because—
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
I wanted to write and speak, but I had to make money because I had just lost my job. And I'm literally about to go bankrupt. We're going to lose our house. I second mortgaged my home, $20,000 in credit cards, to do this one Moe's Southwest Grill. And the goal was hopefully make enough money with the Moe's that would allow me to then to write and speak and follow my dream, follow my passion. And so I start this newsletter and people start reading it. They start sharing it all the way back in 2002. I think it was probably one of the first e-newsletters out there. Now everyone has one.
Yeah.
But doing that, and then people started to reach out. And next thing you know, I got a book deal from the newsletter.
That's crazy. If you gave me 100 guesses on how that happened, I wouldn't have been like, I bet he had a Moe's that financed his dream. Like, I bet this dream was backed by burritos. Like, that wouldn't have ended my top 100 guesses. So I love that there's somebody listening to it right today that's like, okay, I got a day job, I got another thing, but I want to quit it all. And it's such a great example of something else can fund the thing you're doing. Like, if you do it deliberately with pace, it's something else. Like, I always tell people, be your own angel investor. Like, when I have a day job, I'm not grumpy at that day job because I'm funding my other thing. Like, let's go. So I love that that's your start. Your daughter is starting to do public speaking too. Like, I've seen your posts about what she's doing. What advice are you giving her about this industry or chasing goals? Cause I know, like, one of the things I really respect about you is that you're a guy who's super successful and super ambitious in healthy ways, but you also see your family as one of the most important things. Like, there's not an either or. Like, you and I think both actively push back against the idea that to be successful, you have to get divorced 10 times or your kids don't like you or whatever you got to step on necks to get to the top, all the kind of rah-rah stuff that you go, no, I don't accept that. I think you can have a great family, have a great marriage. What advice are you giving to her about her journey right now?
I really appreciate you saying that. That means a lot because I really was intentional about that. Like, I knew I wanted to do training and all the things we're doing now, but I knew that I had to wait till my kids were in college or out of college before I would actually start that, because I knew you could only handle so much. So for me, it was, okay, I'm going to write, speak, and family. That's what I'm doing. And I made my family a priority. Like, we would go away every July, every December, we would spend time as a family. To this day, we're really close because we spent a lot of time together during those times. We also did family meetings, which were essential. And so my daughter at my 50th birthday party, just recently, you know, a bunch of people were there. Sean McVay was there. Jay Glazer was there. Ed Mylett was there. It was a really cool event. My daughter literally got up and spoke. And it was like, I was at my own funeral, but alive, which was nice.
Yeah.
And my daughter told all these people how I made a difference in her life and talked about how I was a favorite parent. She's like, sorry, mom, which was really funny.
Ah, that's funny.
It was cute. But it was like, that made me tear up because I'm like, okay, I did a lot of things wrong. And by the way, I almost ruined her as a lacrosse player because I was so negative when she was younger. Mm-hmm. So I had to change. I had to become a more positive leader and a more positive parent. So I want people to know that. Definitely not perfect. Wish I would have done some things differently with my son as well. Made mistakes. But the one thing I did was, the best advice I got from how to parent was from my good friend from college, his parents. They had 8 kids, all grew up in Boston. The dad ran TV 38. It was the Berkery family. And his mom said, love unconditionally. Just love your kids. Give them lots of love. And so now, as my daughter is speaking, doing this work, I'm trying to give her lots of love and support. I don't want to criticize too much early on because then she's not going to want to do it. I want to encourage, ignite. And she's doing great. Like, she just gave 6 or 7 talks this month in August.
Oh, that's great.
Districts, a couple companies. She did Hanes. She did an event with me where there were 100 global leaders there from around the world. And she actually led the workshop and did an incredible job. Like, she's a natural. She was born to do this. So it's really great to see her do this work. We did the Purpose Summit together where we shared the stage together and told our story. And the feedback was awesome. So what I'm telling her is principle, story, application. I'm telling her to try to think of great stories, funny stories. User humor, user personal experiences, share the principles. Make sure you go there to make a difference. Don't forget, like, this matters. Like, every talk matters because you never know who you're going to impact that day. And she's naturally like that. She wants to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool that we spend this time, like, talking about our speaking. My wife is doing it too. So the three of us now, like, when we're together as a family, we're talking about, oh, what keynote do you have coming up? What are you doing? What are you working on?
Great.
And my son thinks we're all crazy. My son's like, okay, you guys are nuts. But we're the speakers. We want to do a show called The Motivators, which I think would be really funny because I'm mentoring my daughter along the way, helping my wife. My wife just gave a talk. My daughter was there and my daughter is now critiquing my wife.
That's funny.
Helping her get better. So it's really this really interesting dynamic. I never thought years ago, like when I chose this work, that my daughter would then be doing it and it would become a family affair. Never thought of that.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch on my end. And I've got our kids are probably 5 or 6 years behind your kids age-wise. So it's fun for me to kind of look towards the future a little bit. So we talked about you've written 28 books. You've got the latest one, One Truth. What keeps you writing? So I'm sure that's a question you think about. I'm sure. And I know my answer because I've written 9 books. But what keeps you going? You're on the beach, you're working on an idea, or you're waiting for an idea, you know, like what keeps you going? Oh, this is something I'm still going to be courageous about. I'm still curious about, like, what made you want to write book number 28?
I remember John Wiley and Sons, my publisher, reached out to me and said, hey, we need to do a book this year. We got to get a book out there. And I said, I can't write a book just to write a book. I have to write something because there's something to say. Something I'm meant to share with the world. And that's what keeps me writing. Is there something I'm meant to share? And when that idea, you know this well, when it won't leave you alone and you keep talking about it and then you share it with friends and then you share it in your talks and then your clients go, oh, I like that. You're like, okay, I know what my next book is. I'm going to now work on that. It's the same thing for you, right?
Yeah, 100%.
The idea comes, it hits you, and it will not leave. It's like Velcro. It will not leave. It holds on to you until you write it. And then you basically give birth to this book. And I don't know what birth, you know, feels like, but I know that it's very painful when you're first getting that book out there. But then when you do, it's like this release and you feel great and you put it out into the world. And then I think it's just that, that mindset that says, I have something to say that can make a difference. I write to inspire, to impact. I know I'm not doing it for the money, although obviously if books sell, you make money, but I would write for free. Like if you weren't paying me, I would still do it. And I feel like this is what I'm called to do. The other day I was going to give a talk and it was in a place that like I shouldn't have to travel to anymore. Staying in a hotel, I shouldn't have to stay in anymore. But I was doing it because I wanted to do this event. I wanted to make a difference. And I thought, you know what? You're still doing it because you're doing it for the right reasons. And someone said, why are you doing this? And I said, because this is my calling, because this is my mission. It's like Billy Joel still playing at Madison Square Garden. I'm going September 10th, by the way, to see him for the first time.
But it's like, amazing.
The guy is still playing. He's still doing it because I believe those who are still doing it and continue to do it, they're the ones that are doing it for the reasons of it's in their heart. It's an expression of their soul and they know they're here to do this work. So that's why I keep doing it.
So with this book in particular, because I think there's a number of your books that you go, okay, this one's for this type of person, this type of challenge. What's the challenge this one addresses? What's the pain point or the, this is a question, because you're right. I write books often when I find something in my own life I want to change and I work on it and work on it. And then I see, do other people have it too? Like, oh, they do. Okay, great. This is worth spending years working on or talking about. I mean, you and I are the same in that like 10 years later, we're still talking about books we wrote 10 years ago. So who's this particular book for?
This book is my most important book that I've ever written. I believe it's my best book I've ever written. And it's for people who are feeling separate, divided, weak, powerless, anxious, and scared. People who want to be more powerful. People who want to live life with more courage and confidence. And in many ways, it goes very well with, you know, your book soundtracks in terms of the idea that it's all a battle of our mind and we got to win the battle of our mind. But I teach high state of mind, low state of mind, and how everything ultimately comes down to oneness or separateness. And so a team that is one or connected is a powerful team. A team that is separate and divided is a very weak team. A relationship that is very connected, a husband and wife, it's going to be a great relationship, a great marriage. If you feel weak and separate and divided and you're not connecting, guess what? The marriage is headed for, you know, in the wrong direction. And so understanding how everything comes down to oneness and separateness, and also at the psychological level, when we move from oneness to separateness, we move from positive to negative. So all mental health disorders report feelings of alone, feeling alone, isolation, disconnection, and feeling separate. So they retreat away from life and away from others. They become more and more isolated. We saw this during the pandemic. So this book addresses those who are struggling in that way, but it's also for anyone who wants to build a more powerful team, to build a more united team. Anyone who wants to live in that higher state with more courage and confidence. So to me, it's the ultimate key to mental toughness, high performance, and mental health. And when you understand how thoughts work and how the mind, the spirit, the soul, and how everything works together to create this reality we're experiencing, then everything makes so much more sense when you understand, am I feeling separate or am I feeling more connected and one?
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's important to distinguish that. You don't have to be feeling negative or weak or powerless to read the book, because I know some of the best teams in the world who perform at the highest levels are saying, hey, we want to read this book. Like this is, we brought John in to speak to the team about this before we do our national championship march. Like we see it on the horizon, because I think high performers are always learning. They're always growing. There's no neutral. You're either growing or dying. There's no, cities are either growing or dying. Humans are either elevating up or elevating down. So I want to make that distinction that if right now you're listening to them going, well, I don't feel that separated. If you want to get to different levels, like you keep leveling up with concepts like this, with ideas like this, I want to change gears for a second. I think you're a really good friend. I think based on my interaction with you, based on the people you interact with, and I just see you have what seems to me to be deepening friendships. So whether it's long-term relationship with Daniel Decker, one of the people that works with you, Ed Milet, your birthday party. Like Jim Rome did an audio about how special it was to be in that room with the people there. I think you do a good job of being a friend. I don't think it's easy to be a friend. I don't think it's automatic to be a friend. How would you encourage somebody that wants to have more friends or be a better friend or have deepening relationships so that you, as you age, you have real relationships?
That's the first time I ever got that question. And it's such a great question because I used to not be about friendships or relationships. I was so focused on my career. I was
Were a waste of time. They're so messy. They take forever. Like, yeah, I get it, dude.
And I was a Lone Ranger. Yeah. Like here I am on the road all the time speaking. Literally since I'm 36 years old, going from place to place on the road, speaking, staying in hotels, airplanes, coming home, seeing your family, seeing your kids, showering, sleeping, and then hitting the road again. That was my life for a long time. So I was always in this building, creating mode, and in many ways, survival mode. It wasn't about relationships for me. And then COVID hit. So it's interesting you're saying that because COVID for many was the great separator. But for me, it was the great uniter because it was during that time I realized the value of friendships and relationships. And I reached out to old friends from college. We went to Cape Cod. We played golf. We hung out together. It was incredible because everything was shut down. I went out to LA where we have a place down in Santa Monica and I would see Erwin McManus and I started to hang out with Ed. And that's when we became friends during that time. And we really bonded and I saw the value of like, just hanging out with great guys and just talking and just being friends. And so ever since that time, 2020, I made it a point to really be a good friend and reach out to people and connect to people. Now, I was always someone who put others before my agenda. I was never someone who said, I've got to get ahead and stomp over people. So I always had a level of integrity and people knew they could trust me because I always basically did what I said I was going to do. I also never ruined a relationship for business or something like that. I never would do that myself. For me, the relationship was always more important and I always acted in integrity. But now it became about friendships are everything. Everything else is furniture. And even my daughter says, Dad, you have all these friends now where in the past, you know, she doesn't remember me being with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And it's been just so awesome. So my advice to people is we can't do life alone. You know, we're better together. And then together we accomplish amazing things. And life is so much more meaningful and enjoyable when you get together with good friends and you just talk about life, talk about your challenges, talk about your triumphs and victories. Like being a good friend is being happy for someone when they're thriving and maybe you're not, but you're still happy for them. Like that's being a friend. I think so often like we get jealous when someone else is successful. If you know that you're on your path, living your purpose, and there's a timeline for each of us, then you can actually root for someone else without worrying about you measuring up. So for me, pickleball also, John, has been huge. Like, you know, I know people think pickleball is for 90-year-olds, but actually it's something I've been playing a lot. A lot of younger people are playing, and that's been a blast playing with younger people too in 20s, 30s.
Do you have a court at your house yet? Like have you reached that level?
I'm going to build one, but I played with Billy Bush and Chad Veach, David Nurse a few weeks ago.
David Nurse. Love that guy.
Yeah, at Billy's house. It was a blast. And again, that's been a great part of life too, is just competing, but then still being friends. So my advice is make time for friendships. It will enrich your life. And it really is something that as you grow too, you appreciate more and more.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's funny you said your daughter's surprised at the number of friends. My assistant, I made a lunch and a dinner appointment in South Dakota when I was there. And usually I'm very isolated. Like I travel, I go right from the airport, right to the hotel. I'm writing. And she was like, is this an error on the calendar? I see like you're meeting two different friends. And I was like, no, this is what I do now. I'm apparently not going to be isolated. And it caught her off guard that I was like, yeah. Because the thing that hit me was possibility always comes from people. like possibility, like if I want to be live a life full of possibility and not know where it's going to go and in a really joyful way, it's always people. It's never me alone in a room by myself. I've never spent 3 hours scrolling Instagram or whatever and thought that was a good use of time. I'm glad I didn't go to that dinner. Like I got a lot out of that scroll session. Like whenever I do the relationship, it's worth it. So the other thing that I think is really interesting about you is you're always adding new things to your business. You're always trying new things. You're always doing new things. What's your process like for prioritizing? Because the podcast is All It Takes is a Goal. And I recently asked listeners how many goals they had. And on average, they had 22.5 goals. So no one listens to this podcast and goes, I need help finding a goal. They have 100. They have more than they could possibly do. You have more opportunities, more things you could develop. How do you prioritize the things you're going to work on? Like, how do you say no to stuff? What does that look like for you?
I'm going to back up 1 second too and just say, John, like reaching out to you over the last few years too, like becoming friends with you has been really special. Reaching out to Donald Miller, like there are people that I've known that I say, you know what? I really like that person. I'd love to hang out with that person. Like, I'd love to be their friend. Like, that's always my thing. I want to be their friend. I don't want something from them. I want to be their friend.
Well, and you'd be brave. First. You'd be brave to reach out because they might not reach out back, but you have to be brave.
Right. You have to go after your friendships and pursue them. Jay Glazer, I reached out to Chip Kelly. He said, hey, I love that guy, Jay Glazer. Love to reach out to him. Reached out to Jay Glazer, became his friend, and then was there for him when he needed me during a tough time. Yeah. And it was like, but I reached out to him initially to be his friend, and I'm glad I did. But going back to your other question in terms of goals, yeah, that's such a great point. Like, we have so many different goals. You really have to focus and really create your priorities. Like, what matters most? I'm 52. Maybe you got 20, 30 good years left if you really think of that.
Yeah.
What matters most? What am I going to focus on? What kind of impact do I want to have? What kind of legacy do I want to leave? And that has really helped me think about like where I'm going to focus my energy and my time. What books am I going to write? Because you can only write so many books. So I already know the next few books. So I know what I'm going to write there. And yes, I could write some other books that might be more popular, make more money. But I know like in my heart, no, I'm meant to write this one next. And I'm going to write. And I don't know why, but I always just am obedient. I just follow. I follow the energy. I follow the wisdom. I follow the guidance. I listen to that voice and I go for it. And I do it. I really believe God has a plan. I just try to tune into it and listen to it and go forward with it. But in terms of the goals, like I knew recently, okay, we've got positive leadership, positive team and energy bus. Mm-hmm. I've got to create something that allows us to share that, focus on that. We have people coming to us wanting to train, teach, do keynotes, workshops. And so recently that became very clear. All right, we're going to create a training program that includes all three. And we're going to have a certified program where people can get certified to teach all three programs. And so we know like this is it. And that's my core thing. Like you got to identify your core. I want to go back to a mistake. I did a positive cookie. And so I did this positive cookie 5 years ago. And I thought, oh, it's connected to my core because it's all about positivity. It was a
like you made a cookie, like you produced your own cookie.
Amazing organic cookie that I had made, like food scientist and everything. Yep. Put a lot of money into it, had two other partners who supposedly had done this before. They hadn't really done it in this way before I found out. They didn't have the experience I thought they did, but we're gonna do this cookie. And inside the wrapper was a little card with a positive quote on the card, like a modern fortune cookie.
Yeah.
Great idea. So all of a sudden it's made, it's a great cookie. We start reaching out to grocery stores and we find out that it cost $1.10 to make the cookie. We knew that, but the grocery stores would only pay us $1.30.
So you'd lose money on every single.
Well, cookie. No, you made 20 cents, but you got to spend $1.10 to make 20 cents, actually.
So they'd pay you a dollar. How much would they pay you for the cookie?
They pay you $1.30 and.
Oh, 30. I saw you thought you said $1.03.
I know $1.30 and $1.10 to make it. So 20 cents, you know, to make, but it costs you $1.10 is not a scalable, feasible model in food or in anything.
You got to pay for the cookie to get there.
I quickly realized, man, that's it. It's over. Like I'm done. Unless I want to go back in, create a new cookie, make it cheaper, so forth. And it really came to me. I heard this, like, these words: I didn't put you on earth to make cookies.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, okay.
Were you on the beach? What? Were you on the beach during this? Like, was this a walk moment?
I think it might have been. I'm trying to remember when it exactly came, but when I, like, it's not even like I hear audible words, but it's just like a download. And I'm like, boom. And I realize, okay, why am I here? Oh, leadership, teamwork, mindset, coach others, help others get better. Yeah. I'm like, that's it. If I got the energy to make a cookie, then what else do I have the energy for? I have the capability, the capacity, and the energy to do something else. But what is it? And it became so clear. Leadership training, team development, and mindset work. I'm like, all right, that's what I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing. That's my goal. That's my vision. That's my mission. That's what I'm focused on. And for the rest of my life, that's what we're going to do.
I love that you just shared a really good principle in that if I have the energy for this other thing that I did that wasn't the right thing, if I applied that energy somewhere else that was the right thing, what could I do? What a great reframe. How many cookies did you end up making? I'm just curious.
We made like 20, 30,000. I lost.
Like, were you and your family just eating cookies for like years? Like, you'd open cabinets at the Gordon House and cookies would fall out?
Well, it was an organic, gluten-free, vegan cookie, but actually it was a really good cookie. That's the thing. It tasted amazing, but yeah. My wife and kids started reacting a little bit to it from their food allergies. So I'm like, well, that's not good. So we had all these cookies.
Holy cow.
We were giving them away and we sold a bunch online initially. So it looked like maybe this is promising, but the real way to make money is you got to get in stores and of course Amazon. Yeah. And once we found out the cost, that was it. But yeah, I lost about $150,000 on this venture. But this is another lesson. I took the loss. I didn't feel defeated. Yes, it was a defeat, but I didn't feel defeated. I turned that defeat into a defining moment to then create something that I was meant to do.
Come on, dude. That's so good. Do you do a cookie talk? Like, do you have that story somewhere in a speech?
No, but I actually probably should tell this in one of my talks.
Dude, are you kidding me right now? Maybe that's why you're on this podcast. Like, dude, that is a fire story. We could geek out about that after the podcast, about the ways you could talk about that. But man, that is a fire story.
I'll need, like, some jokes from you because I know there's probably a lot of humor in there about the
dude,
cookie.
You would. Here's one.
I was really positive about the positive cookie, but it quickly turned into a negative cookie.
Yeah. It was a negative cookie. Oh my God, dude. There's
$150,000. It was a very negative cookie.
The world's most expensive cookie is the title of the talk. Like, dude, oh my gosh, I'm dead serious. It's such a good story. All right. I only have two more questions and these are really easy. We could talk for 10 hours because I wasn't able to make it out to your birthday party. We've only hung out in real life one time, I think in Tupelo, Mississippi, which is funny too. I've only spoken in Mississippi like twice. And once was like, you and I were like backstage in Tupelo.
That's right. I feel like we've been together more, but you're right. Only one time in person.
I can't think of another one where we would have been at an event or something. So
I realized we were about the same height. That's all I realized.
It's a great height. It's a legit height. I told my wife one day, I was like, if I was taller, we might not have gotten married. And she's like, what a terrible thing to say. And I said, no. I'm saying if I had height, I might not have had to develop this winsome personality. Like, I could have coasted like all these tallies out here that don't have to work as hard as I do to have a sense of humor. I could have just gotten by on like big frame. But because I'm the height I am, I had to really, really kind of lean into being funny. Two questions. What is on your like Mount Rushmore of nonfiction kind of self-help books, other than your own? What would you say, like, these are the 1 through 4, or this is the one I've given away the most other than my own? Sometimes people like to answer the question that way because it's hard to come up with 4 on the spot. But if you had to name a couple books that you're like, man, these are the ones that really meant something to me, or I think mean something to people.
I only read my books, John. That's the truth.
No. You'd be surprised that people will occasionally answer that question with a list of their own books. I know you wouldn't, but at this point in the podcast history, I don't want to have to edit out somebody that goes, well, my 4 most recent books. Okay. And one of them will be about humility. Fine.
I want to say one thing real quick about what you said about height, though, because this is great. My brother was 6'2". And I'm 5'8" and a half. And when you're 5'8" and a half, you got to add
the half. You add the half. Yeah, you round up.
And so my dad, you know, always instilled in me grit. My son, who is about 6 foot, always gives me a hard time for being shorter and wishes he was taller. And I said, listen, Cole, if you change one thing, you have to change everything. And so if I was taller, I wouldn't be as gritty. And because I had to work so hard in sports, being that shorter guy, playing my brother in basketball, it made me who I am. So when that energy bus was rejected by over 30 publishers.
30, dude. 30.
I kept going. I didn't give up because I had the grit because of my height. I guarantee it was back to that height. If I was taller and I was this athlete probably that had things come to him, I always had to work for everything to start, to get benched, to come start again. Like it was this battle all the time. It made me who I am. So I just had to share that.
Dude, you hold on. You need to do something around 30 and 3. 30 rejections, 3 million sold. There's something there. Like, I don't care if it's a newsletter. I don't care if it's a, like, there's something fun about, like, because what does that break down mathematically? 100,000 copies sold for every rejection?
I think
so.
Dude,
that's insane. Man, I'll just be your speechwriter. I'll move to Jacksonville.
This is why you're so brilliant. And I want everyone to know, I think you're the funniest person on the planet. So I just love
I appreciate that. I'll move to Jacksonville.
I always crack up. I just laugh all the time.
30 and 3, dude. Come on.
But for books that I share with others, I'm looking at a stack here, but definitely A Million Miles in 1,000 Years by our friend Donald Miller. I love that book. Soul Keeping by John Ortberg is one of my favorite books. Love that book. The Nourishing of the Soul. All the Places You'll Go from John Ortberg is also one of my favorite books. Love that as well. Rich Dad, Poor Dad really got me into knowing, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want to always work for someone. And that was a defining moment. Who Moved My Cheese way back when was a defining moment for me in terms of, okay, I lost my job. What am I going to do now? Yep. It was really a great book for me to read during that time. And I got to give a nod to Og Mandito, The Greatest Salesman, who made me want to write fables. And Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach and Illusions by Richard Bach made me also want to write fables. These were two books I read when I was like 18, 19. And they were just so magical. And every time I walk on the beach, I remind myself, you had this even inclination all the way back then. It came alive when you realized, what am I here to do? But I remember those moments of walking on the beach, reading those books and thinking, you know, maybe one day I could write a book like that. And so for me, that's a magical author, magical moment that led me to do the work I'm doing now. And John, sometimes I get so busy speaking, writing, doing everything, like building this training company like we are, I have to remind myself, no, you were the young guy who wanted to write these magical books. So make sure you make time to do it. And you know what? I'm going to do it for this one book coming up. And I believe this book is going to be truly magical like those were for me.
I love that. That is a fantastic answer. John, this has been a blast. Last question, where can people find out more about you and the new book?
JohnGordon.com, JohnGordon.com. And then also the new book is GetOneTruth.com. And trust me, check out that book. It's really unique. It's like nothing I've ever written. And I think it's something that's going to help you get to that higher state of mind that we all want.
I love it. John, thanks for jumping on here. I know we're going to do it again. And I'm coming to the next birthday party. Let's figure that out.
Oh, man, I wish you were there. Can't wait for you to be the next one. Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you for listening to my interview with John Gordon today. We'll put all the links in the show notes as always. And thank you for reviewing my podcast. The reviews you write are super encouraging. Podcasts are weird. They're different for me than like a speech, because with a speech, you can get audience reaction, but that's not the case with podcasts. You kind of do them in a vacuum. But when you write a review, it gives me a chance to hear from you and get a sense of what's working with the show. So thank you for taking the time to write those. Please make sure you subscribe or follow or whatever it is the kids are saying these days. And please write a review. I'll see you next week. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes is a Goal podcast.